Welcome to episode 207 of the Ski Podcast, and thanks for joining us, listener. Today, we're going to be discussing Valsenie and the Haute-Maurienne area of France and finding out more about skiing in Slovenia. My name is Ian Martin. I'd like to introduce my guest today. I'm delighted to welcome back to the show freelance journalist and blogger and regular guest, Katia Gaskell. Katia was last on the show in episode 197 when she was sharing her tips on skiing with children. Hi, Katia. How are you?
Hi, Ian. I'm well, thank you. Good to be back.
Can I ask where you are today?
I am at home in North London with some sunshine for once, so that's nice.
My second guest today is also a regular. He last joined us in September for episode 186 when he was telling us about glacier skiing in Austria. It's Rob Rees. Hi, Rob. How are you?
I'm very well, Ian. Good to see you again.
And where are you today, Rob?
I'm in just outside Tame in Oxfordshire.
Okay, so this is, I guess, quite unusual. The first podcast for a while where all of us are based in the UK. But as regular listeners will know, I do like to find out when everyone skied or snowboarded last. So let's start with you, Katia. When were you last on snow?
I was just last week, actually. I had my first time ever skiing in Italy. And I went with my dad, who is turning 80 this year. So we went skiing together in Val Gardena.
Wow, there are so many notable things about that. Firstly, you're a very experienced skier. I'm amazed you've never been to Italy before. How did you manage to avoid it?
I don't know. Yeah, it's really, I no idea. And both my dad and I said, how have we not been here before? It was amazing.
Okay. And then the second thing is, you just said your father is 80 and he's evidently still skiing. That's very impressive.
Still skiing and has no plans to retire his ski boots just yet.
Wow. I mean, that is inspiring and wonderful to hear. And what was it like in Val Gardena?
Yeah, it was beautiful. I mean, everything that everybody said about the Dolomites is just, it's stunning. You know, definitely spring skiing, so softer snow. And by the end of the day, it was pretty slushy, but beautiful. Amazing food, great scenery, time with my dad. Yeah, it was perfect.
It sounds like a brilliant trip. And although I have skied in Italy on a number of occasions in lots of different resorts, I still have never been to the Dolomites. So I've really got to redress that as soon as I can. What about you, Rob? When were you last on snow?
About 2.5 weeks ago, I was in Slovenia in a resort called Rogla, which nobody will have ever heard of, sort of purpose-built resort just near Maribor.
We are going to be finding out all about Slovenia a little bit later on in the podcast. Just tell me briefly, what was the snow like while you were there?
Snow was okay. I think, obviously, a lot of the southern side of the Alps has struggled this season. It was okay, but they, you know, a lot of these hills are on grass, so obviously the snow sticks very early and they can build up a good base and artificial snow for most of the season. So,
well, I was last on snow probably about 2 weeks ago now in Verbier, and I've already covered that in episode 206 of the podcast. But next week, or later this week on Friday, we are going to be driving to the Alps for our, you know, family holiday, and we're going to be going to Les Deux Alpes. And I'm delighted to see that there's been fresh snow out in the Alps. Makes me very excited about it. I do have some snow reports that have been sent in by some of our regular contributors. So let's have a listen to those.
Ian, buonasera from the Italian Dolomites. My name's Tim Hudson from Inspired Italy. Well, what a mixed bag I have to report to you, because up until, I'm going to say, 10 days ago, was really getting very, very warm and very slushy in the bottom of the valley. But amazingly, last weekend, we had a very significant downfall of snow right across the Dolomites. Temperatures plummeted, in actual fact, and have been pretty much freezing overnight and quite warm during the day, and more snow in the forecast. So the skiing is remarkably good, in actual fact. I've spoken to a couple of colleagues and friends, one in Cortina, another one just down the valley as well, just to make sure that this is consistent right across the Dolomites, and that's what they're reporting. Skiing on the north-facing slopes is particularly good. South-facing in the afternoon after lunch is obviously getting a little bit soft, and needs to be taken with a little bit of care. skiing here until the 7th of April. The Sella Ronda is still open, both clockwise and anti-clockwise. So if you're coming to the Dolomites in the final week of the season, I think you're in for a great time. Hope you've had a great ski season wherever you've been. Do take a look at the Dolomites for 2025. Tim Hudson from Inspired Italy saying ciao and have a great summer. Ciao, ciao.
Hi, this is Alex from Tip Top Ski Coaching. So we've woken up this morning to over 40 centimetres of snow here in Lidders Alp at village level and much more at altitude, and it continues to snow. So it looks like the Easter holidays are going to be absolutely fantastic with plenty of fresh snow and a winter wonderland in resort.
Hi, and hi everyone. Andy, San Antonio. The snow is fantastic. This is going to sound quite contradictory, but the mountain is just about to close. There's a storm rapidly incoming, and for the first time in a long, long time, they've closed several parts of the mountain. So all the Rendell areas closed, the Steuben areas closed, the Alamada, the Shinda, all up to the top, the Veluga. Snow conditions at the moment are actually really nice. If you go below 1,600 metres, it's getting quite slushy and sticky, but everything above that is really beautiful skiing and still very fresh. We had a great dump the other day, probably about 40-45 centimetres came down overnight, followed by two blue sky powder days. So it was really, really fantastic conditions. Resort's pretty busy for Easter, which is really good. And looking ahead, the forecast, if the snow comes in again, is going to be fantastic for the end of the season. Looking back historically, in 25 years I can remember being in St Anton. Much of it I don't actually remember, but that's a different story. The 25 years, Easter's always been my favourite time to ski. We always have great snow. There's always a dump round about this sort of time, the last week in March, first week of April. There's always a big dump of snow which sees you through right to the very end. The lifts closed this year in the Arlberg on the 21st, but I'm pretty confident you could be skiing and all the tourists will be out and skiing up until the very end of the month. There's way over 4 metres of snow in at the top of the Gautzig. That's at 2,200 metres. There's over 4 metres of snow depth, which is some of the most the Arlberg's actually ever had.
That is very encouraging. You know, as we are moving towards the end of the season, obviously Easter coming up imminently, but many resorts will be open until mid and end April, and some of them even into May. And if this snow continues like this, certainly higher up, there's going to be plenty of snow available for people through to the end of the lifts running. So I'd like to thank Tim, Alex and Andy for those snow reports. Listener, if you are going to snow, don't forget that you can save money when you book your ski hire at intersportrent.com. You can use the code SKIPODCAST and that gets you a guaranteed discount on hire in France, Austria and Switzerland. You don't even need to use a code. You can just take the link in the show notes. And I actually did this myself last week because I was booking my ski hire for my kids in Lidders Alp. So I thought, right, let's see what happens. So I went to show notes, clicked on the link, and I ended up getting 11% discount off of the ski hire, which is more than their official discount code was available at the time. So there you go. I do know that it works. Right, let's move on to a little bit of news. Team GB, friend of the show, last on the podcast in episode 200, Team GB telemarker Jasmine Taylor. I called her Britain's greatest ever racer on skis in episode 206, and I think she proved that last week when she picked up not just one, but two Crystal Globes at the World Cup finals. She won the sprint and overall last week. That gives her 11 podiums, including 5 wins across the season. So congratulations, Jasmine. It's so unfortunate. As a telemarker, you know, that sport, that discipline is not included in the Olympics and therefore isn't quite as high profile, but it's such an amazing and brilliant result. Now, also going on at the moment are the British Championships. They are being held in Tignes and Val d'Isère, and I've been getting updates day by day. It's going on literally as we are speaking right now. But I did see a couple of notable results that I was interested to see. Firstly, Rhys Bell won the British slalom title. And if that surname rings a Bell. That is because she is Martin Bell's daughter and Graham Bell's niece. They've obviously both been on the show before, but really interesting to see her career progressing well and see her improving her fist points each year. The men's slalom was won by Laurie Taylor, perhaps surprisingly for the first time. He's obviously been on the show before, last time, I think, episode 200. And in the juniors, I was fascinated to see that Freddie Carrick-Smith beat his twin brother, Zach Carrick-Smith, by 0.42 of a second in the junior slalom, and then again by 0.59 of a second in the senior giant slalom. Now, regular listeners will remember that Zach Carrick-Smith, he was out at the Youth Olympic Games. I interviewed him in episode 200. He won two golds there, and he got into that. Great Britain could only send one skier, but he constantly referred to this continual sibling rivalry with his twin brother, and they're evidently very close in abilities and times, and it's going to be really interesting to see how that progresses in the future, and hopefully they will continue to do really well for Great Britain. Right, Katia, delighted to have you back on the show. One of the reasons I wanted to have you back is I know that recently you've been out to the Haute-Maurienne, and that is an area of France that we've never covered on the podcast before. I guess some listeners will have heard of the resort Valsenis. Even then, that's certainly not one of the most well-known resorts out there. But I wondered if you could tell me a little bit more about it. Firstly, when did you go there? And where is it? Where will people kind of, how will they fit that into their idea of the Alps?
Yeah, so I was there just a couple of weeks ago, and basically the Haute-Maurienne Valley sits the other side of the Tarentaise Valley. So really you've got Val d'Isère just the other side of the Vanoise National Park. You've got the sort of eastern edge of the sort of far edges of Val d'Isère. So it's next to this, you know, really well-known ski area. But yeah, it's really relatively unknown to British skiers, sort of popular with French and Belgians and Dutch, I think. But it's this long valley that is made up of six resorts. They're not linked, but they're linked by ski pass. So you can use one ski pass to go in all six. And Valsenis is the biggest of the six of them, and that has 125 kilometers apiece. They're all really, really different. It was a fascinating place to visit and a great place to ski.
So firstly, could I just ask you, what's the name of that collective pass then that covers all the different resorts?
So it's the Haute-Maurienne Vanoise.
And you said how it's very close to Val d'Isère. In summer, I've been in Val d'Isère and I've cycled up to the Col de l'Isaran. And I think what you're saying is, if you go down the other side, you're going to end up in the Haute-Maurienne.
Exactly. You will end up in the sort of furthest town down the valley, which is called Bonneval-sur-Arc, which is this tiny sort of cluster of stone and timber houses. And that resort itself only has 32 kilometers of piste, but it does have fantastic ski touring. And it also has great free riding. And they were hosting one of the qualifiers for the Free Ride World Cup the weekend after we visited.
Okay. And so did you do any ski touring when you were there?
We did. And I'm quite a novice ski tourer, so it was perfect for me. And we did this really great tour of just a couple of hours to the lower Vallonnée Glacier, which was just beautiful, this kind of soaring wall of blue ice, and got there, stopped for a bit, and our guide then brought a bottle of white wine out of his backpack. So it was like the perfect ski touring experience before we then sort of headed back down to Bonneval.
Really? I mean, I'm not sure that I would necessarily call that the perfect ski touring experience, because I suspect that that would impact on my skiing ability if I'd had a couple of glasses of white wine before coming down.
It was actually quite helpful. So small tumbler of white wine, and then we made our way back down for lunch. So it was a very relaxed ski touring experience.
Okay, and you said, you know, you're a bit of a novice, but 2 hours of ski touring isn't insubstantial, is it?
No, and it was great. I think that's one of the good things about Bonneval, is that they really have quite entry-level ski touring. I mean, it wasn't a lot of going up, you know, it was quite sort of flat. We didn't start right from the bottom. But if you are a serious tourer, then there are lots of other options to kind of go further afield and really challenge yourself. So
are they marked, the ski touring routes, or is it you were with a guide? Would someone want to hire a guide if they were going to go there?
I would definitely go with a guide. I mean, I'd always say go with a guide if you are particularly sort of later in the season, you know, you're not quite sure of the area and the snow. I think it's definitely worth going with someone who knows the area well. We bumped into some locals who are out touring by themselves, so but they obviously know the area well.
So you said that that's Bonneville-sur-Arc at the end of the valley, and you were staying in the main resort of Alcenis, were you?
That's right.
So how would you connect to get up there? Because you said they're not connected by lift.
So there's a shuttle bus that runs the length of the valley. Otherwise, you'd need a car. So you have Bonneval, and then the next resort down the valley is called Besson, which is in a sort of wide open plain. And that's really well known for cross-country skiing. It's one of the biggest Nordic tracks in France and one of the first to open. And they have over 130 kilometers of trails and biathlon stadium. So we got to do some shooting as well, which was weirdly satisfying.
I love biathlon. I've done the shooting. I haven't done the cross-country skiing, then suddenly trying to stop and doing the shooting. But tell me, so when I tried that in Chamonix, which is a couple of years ago with my kids, it was all digital, let's say. You know, there's no bullets or anything like this involved. And we had little LED readout to our right, so you could see exactly where your shots were going on the target. Was it something like that?
No, this was actual with shots. Like, this was proper,
right,
on, you know, 50-meter distance targets and a proper biathlon rifle. So it was... yeah, it was quite something. I've done it before with the LED readers, but this was a whole nother level. And great fun, actually. We tried it where you sort of ski along and then have to lie down and shoot, which was very ungraceful. And then we sort of skied along and did the standing shooting. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. We had a very patient young instructor who looked after us well.
With that type of rifle, then, did it have a kick to it at all?
Not so much, no. I don't know what kind of rifles they use. I should really have asked.
That's okay. And so the other thing I remember is, you know, evidently it's easier to aim when you're prone, when you're lying down, than when you're standing up. Because the skill that those biathletes have is being able to reduce their heart rate and get it down as low as possible so that when the blood pumps around your body, it doesn't just move your hand slightly every second. You know, they can keep it down so low even after they've just been going all out on skis, so that their accuracy can be as good as possible.
Absolutely. Although I found I managed to get 3 out of 5 targets standing, so I was pretty proud of that. I mean, I think it helped that I wasn't very fast on my cross-country skis, so didn't really have to reduce my heart rate very much. It was really good fun. I'm really tempted to do it more.
Yeah. And was it competitive? You had other journalists on this press trip. Were you, you know, seeing who could get the best score?
I mean, we all pretended not to be competitive, but there was definitely, a bit of a competitive element to it.
Excellent. Well, that sounds brilliant. So that's in Besson, which is a town kind of in between where you could do biathlon and cross country. And then Valsigny is a bit further on.
Exactly. Yeah. And Valsigny is the largest of the resorts and really... the biggest place for sort of downhill skiing. It's great. It's a really impressive ski area. I mean, it also helped that we arrived and they'd had sort of 2 meters of snowfall just a few days earlier. So we were skiing in powder that I have not skied on in years. I mean, sort of shin height powder. It was incredible.
So in terms of size, Valsigny, what kind of, you mentioned before Bonneville had, I think, 32 kilometers apiece. What's it in Valsigny?
Valsigny is 125, so it's largely thought of as a family resort. You know, there's a lot of kind of cruisy blues and some nice reds, but there's also some really nice off-piste, as our guide was very excited to show us with all this sort of new snow. Yeah, there's a lot of different terrain, so I think it kind of caters to all levels of skiers. I think the difference with sort of somewhere like Valsigny, as opposed to, say, Val d'Isère on the other side of the mountain, you know, it's a very low-key resort. It's mostly self-catering apartments. There's a handful of hotels, you know, local restaurants, no nightclubs, maybe a little bit of après as soon as people get off the slopes. But, you know, it's a very quiet, traditional kind of family resort.
I thought every ski resort was obliged to have at least one nightclub, which is normally called the Avalanche or the Carve. So people had somewhere to go if they wanted to until 4 in the morning.
Yeah, no nightclub. No, it's really surprising. It's very, very quiet.
And tell me how you traveled there.
So we flew into Lyon, and from Lyon, it's about 2.5 hours. The closest airport is Chambéry. There's also the train at Modin, which would be the easiest way to travel, but a landslide had caused issues on the track. Otherwise, you can get, I think it's direct from Paris to Modin, or maybe just one change, but train is super easy to get there, and then Modin is at the end of the valley.
Yeah, I mean, I said before that we'd not featured the Haute-Maurienne, but I kind of had forgotten that I went to Arel a couple of winters ago, I guess it was. And Arel is connected into Val Thorens and the Three Valleys area. And you would access it by getting off the train in Modane, which is what I did. And there is a very fast direct train from Paris to Modane. However, you referred to that landslide. That happened last summer. And it was pretty significant, and it still is significant. And it means that train line, that is normally a route that goes between Paris and Milan into Turin and Milan into Italy, is still not running. They have, I don't know what the French translation for bus replacement service is, but sadly they have a bus replacement service. You can still kind of take that route, but you've got to get off in a bit earlier than Modane, take a train, take a bus over the pass and down onto the other side, which severely diminishes the benefit of traveling by train. But, you know, that will be resolved this summer, as far as I can see. So, you know, it will be possible, therefore, for listeners who are interested to going to Valsigny and the Haute-Maurienne to travel there by train. That's really interesting. You know, I like the idea of a destination where if you wanted to, you could cover a lot of different options, as you said. So you've got navettes or shuttles that run between those different resorts on a decent timetable?
Yeah, I think they, during the day, they run regularly sort of up and down the valley. I think it would probably still be handy to have your own car probably. But, you know, if you just wanted to do one day in Bonneval, one day in Bessin, then it would be very easy to do by public transport.
Well, I know there's a lot of listeners who are always looking for different type of places to ski. And I think that's one of the points of the podcast, to try and cover different areas. So that's brilliant, Katia. Thanks very much for that. I'm going to move on to Rob now, if that's okay. Rob, the reason I wanted to have you on the show, I know you've been on several times before telling us about different places. Most recently, your interest in skiing the glaciers in Austria. But very close to Austria is a country that many British people probably wouldn't even necessarily recognize as a ski destination. And that is Slovenia. When were you there?
I was there a couple of weeks ago, sort of the beginning of March. We had a 5-day trip. Well, obviously, Ljubljana is the capital. And then there's this sort of Triglav National Park, and there's a whole load of ski resorts scattered in amongst those mountains. It's a very mountainous country, three big ranges of mountains, the Julian Alps, which they share with Austria, the Karavankan Alps and the Kamnik-Savinja Alps. So the mountain scenery really does define the Slovenian setup, really.
So you said the Julian Alps, and they share it with Austria. I think we're talking about the Carinthia area.
Carinthia, yeah.
Austria,
yeah, southern Austria, yeah. I mean, you've got the bit, you have Trieste and Udinese in Italy. Obviously, you have Carinthia, you have towns like Villach and Klagenfurt. And then obviously Slovenia abuts Hungary to the east and Croatia to the south. So there's sort of four countries surrounding it. It's one of the smaller of the former Yugoslavian countries. And it probably had the most seamless transition to independence. There was some sort of like 10-day phony war where the Yugoslavian army was trying to keep them in the union, but it all sort of went off relatively seamlessly. There are only 2 million population as well, so it's a pretty small country. They see themselves, you know, quite sort of Northern European in their mentality as well. So, but when we chatted to them, they felt they had more in common with the Austrians than perhaps people further south in
right. Okay, and you said you flew to Ljubljana. How long is that flight from the UK?
It's an hour and 45 minutes. There's a few people going there. I think EasyJet from Gatwick and British Airways from Heathrow. So it's with some pretty good flight times as well. So sort of end of the day. So.
Okay, so that's your base. That's the capital of Slovenia, right? And you're based there. There are different ski resorts in the area. Did you visit several, or were you mainly based in one?
Yeah, we went to four resorts. It was a bit of a sort of round the northern part of the country. obviously it's a pretty small country, really, so it's pretty easy to cover the grounds. There's a resort called Kravavec, which is actually the closest ski resort to any airport in Europe. So it's basically 15 minutes from the airport to the base gondola, and you can be up at the top in another 15 minutes. So, you know, actually you can see the airport from the top of the hill. So that's a pretty nice resort. They've had a lot of investment from the Slovenian government. I mean, it's like I was seeing in a lot of places, like in the USA, these smaller homespun resorts are really struggling, and a lot of them are shutting down because they can't afford to reinvest in new lifts. And obviously with slightly sporadic snow records the last few seasons, it's, you know, financially it's made it quite difficult. But what the Slovenian government very sensibly did, said, have basically put 60 million euros investment into a number of resorts to put some new lifts in. So Kravavec has got a brand new Doppelmayr six-seater, and they've got some very, very nice slopes up there.
And probably not going to do it justice. Did you say it was, you have to tell me how to pronounce it.
Kravavec. I mean, it took me about a week to, I don't even know if I've got
well,
it right.
Yeah, well, that place, how, you know, what's the kind of size of the resort there?
Well, it's about 25 kilometres of skiing, nice base station. When we were there, there was a sort of gastro food festival. They sort of pride themselves on their green credentials. And I think there's a lodge you can stay at. You know, I wouldn't say it was much, the quality wasn't much more than a decent youth hostel, but there's a lodge there, there's bars, there's a good après-ski scene. But basically what you're getting is a lot of day visitors from Ljubljana. They just pop up for the morning or the afternoon. We have pretty good snow there, and there's some very, very nice runs. Yeah.
You mentioned a couple of other resorts as well.
Well, the famous resort in Slovenia that we've probably all heard of from the World Cup series is Kranjska Gora. And that was actually, when we were there, that was shut because they were getting it ready for the slalom, the giant slalom and the slaloms events, which it's well known for. And then we went to a resort called Vogel, which is bang in the middle of the Triglav National Park above Lake Bohin, which is a famous lake in Slovenia, deepest lake in Slovenia. And then we went to this purpose-built resort called Rogla, which is much further towards the Hungarian side near Maribor. And that was basically built, I think, 10, 20 years ago, right on the top of these lovely sort of moorland-type hills with a lot of cross-country up there and some decent runs and, again, some new infrastructure. Again, they benefited from some of the investment from the Slovenian government.
And are those resorts, Vogel and Rogla, a similar size?
I think Rogla's about 15K and Vogel is about 20, 22K.
So you're not going to be going there for your week ski holiday then?
No, it's absolutely not that sort of place. I mean, interestingly, I skied a lot in Carinthian. I'd always looked over to the Julian Alps and thought, oh, and I'd flown into Ljubljana before when I'd been going to Bad Kleinkirchheim in Carinthian. I thought, oh, wouldn't it be nice? Because you see all the ski runs from the airport. There's two ways of doing this, really. If you were on a long weekend break in Ljubljana, you could pop up for, you know, a day skiing or half a day skiing. Or if you wanted to do a little bit of a road trip, like Katja, I've always liked going to the sort of lesser known resorts and pulling together type road trips. So it's an opportunity to experience the culture, food, history, and all that stuff. Ljubljana is a beautiful capital city. I think 75% of it is green spaces. It's a country that's been sort of, like a lot of these places, occupied by lots of different people. Obviously, they had the Turks in from the Ottoman Empire. They had the Romans in from the Roman Empire. The French even came in for a few years and showed them, you know, more libertarian ways and more cultured ways. And obviously, they had the Germans in the war. So it's got a lot of different influences. And obviously, it was a socialist republic under General Tito. So there's a lot of those sort of more brutal type buildings and brutal type monuments. So that's a very beautiful city. Lots of art galleries, lots of museums, lots of riverside cafes. So, it's, you know, it would make a nice, if you got the really good conditions, to pop up there for a day or pull together, a little bit of a mini road trip. You're not going to be skiing your socks off, but like all these things, it's nice to get insights into other places.
For sure. I do like the combination, let's say, of a city break and some skiing as well. Actually, before we came on air, when we were chatting in the green room, we were talking about the cost of skiing at February half term with your family. The regular listeners will recall that last year, I went to Roccarazzo in Italy, in Abruzzo, and that effectively was combined with a trip to Naples, which we had some friends living there. We saw them, but it was really interesting to see, you know, a very different city. We got to see the football when we were there, but I also took the kids to Pompeii, so we had that kind of cultural side of things, as well as a few days skiing as well. And it sounds to me, from what you're saying about Slovenia, that maybe that's what you're suggesting, you know, a combination of both.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be great if you wanted to, never been up on skis, to go and have a sort of trial day. It'd be great if you had kids and you just wanted a couple of days just to see what, you know, what it's like. Or if you, like me, wanted to just see different parts of the country. I mean, there's a lot, you know, we saw quite a lot of other things as well. Obviously, we went to see the Elan Ski Museum. I mean, you know, Elan is not necessarily a big ski brand in Europe. We tend to get dominated by the French and Austrian brands. But in America, it's a massive brand. They've got a very solid reputation. And obviously, as a country, Slovenia punches well above its weight in terms of sport. You've got things like, you know, the two cyclists, Roglic and Pogacar. You've got Tina Maze, who's one of the best ever female skiers, and they've got a lot of famous ski jumpers. There's the FA Cup equivalent in Slovenia, which is the Planica ski jumping. Obviously, a couple of years ago, I did a report from the Four Hills tournament in Innsbruck and Bischofshofen, but the classic sort of season-ending event is at a place called Planica, where they've got some of the which is right near Kranjska Gora. And they've got some of the biggest ski hills in the world. And that's where they do the ski flying, which is, you know, even further than the ski jumping. And, you know, there's lots of records over 250 metres of ski flying. And they're thinking of putting a 300-metre hill in. So there's lots of stuff going on. And obviously, we all forget that Melania Trump is from Slovenia as well. So they've got quite a notable nation for 2 million people.
I'm not entirely sure if that's going to make me more or less inclined to go there. You mentioned it, Elan Skis.
Yeah, they've got a factory in a place called Begunia. There's a beautiful little museum there tracing the whole history. It's a very, very interesting, you know, history to the whole thing. It was set up by a guy called Rudy Finskar, who at age 15 was a ski jumper in the 1936 Olympics in Garmisch. And he actually made his own skis, these beautiful wooden skis for the ski jumping. And then during the war, obviously the partisans equipped themselves with skis. So him and 10 guys were making skis for the sort of mountain troops and partisans. And then after the war, they decided to carry on making skis. And it was called the Workers Ski Cooperative, because obviously at that time, Slovenia was part of Yugoslavia and it was run on socialist principles. And then they decided a better name would be Elan. And in 1952, they changed the name. And then in the 60s, they started exporting to the US, where they luckily had some very, very good distributors. So they are well known in the States. But the thing that really put them on the map was Ingemar Stenmark. He spent his whole ski career on Elan skis, and despite, you know, being a socialist country, and we might think they weren't the best business people, they snapped him up very young. They spotted him as a teenager, gave him a free pair of skis, and, you know, he was on Elan the whole time, and he was, you know, as invincible as Franz Klammer was in the downhill in those times. I always remember watching Ski Sunday, and it was Klammer in the downhill and Stenmark in the slalom. And in those days, they used to wear jumpers, didn't they, with those padded elbows, and he had the most, you know, unusual ski technique. And if you go to the museum, there's some lovely exhibits. You've got all the pins, you know, competitor pins that Ingemar Stenmark had for all the events all over the world. You know, you see some of these American resorts we think of as second nature now, but back then, sort of places like Beaver Creek and Heavenly, we hardly ever heard of those in the 70s. So it was a special place. The other thing about Elan is that they were the first people to create the carving ski. It was remarkable. In 1991, they launched the first, they called it Parabolic Wide Cut Extreme Cut Ski. It was a GS ski. They launched that. And obviously, at the time, this was around the time of independence, 1991. So there was a few, you know, financial problems, issues, you know, who was in charge, the state or the company. And they didn't really exploit that innovation. They weren't really able to patent just the shape. So everybody else plowed into the industry, and the rest is history, really.
Yeah, I mean, that's so interesting to hear that parabolic skis. You know, that was a word. I mean, no one uses that anymore. People just say carving skis, don't they? But that was a thing. I remember, you know, when I was doing seasons in the mid-90s, and, you know, guests saying, oh, well, has the hire shop got parabolics?
Yeah, it's a strange one. But, you know, it's hard to think they have been around for 25 years now.
Oh, and just to confirm then, that Elan Museum is somewhere near Kranjska Gora.
Between Kranjska Gora, I suppose, and Ljubljana. Nowhere's that far apart. Nowhere's more than a sort of hour and a half, 2 hours away. A place called Begunia, where the factory is. They opened a factory there in the 70s.
Can I ask you another question as well? You mentioned it's the Julian Alps. Am I right in saying that there's a pass that covers all of those Slovenian resorts, but also resorts from some of the other countries?
So I think there's the Julian Alps Pass, which I think gives you a few resorts in Italy, Austria and Slovenia. There's a pass that covers the whole of Slovenia as well, if you want to do those smaller resorts. And there's obviously, across the border, there is the Carinthian East Tyrol Pass. If it was me going for a week, I'd probably spend half the time over in Carinthia and half the time in Slovenia, because there's some brilliant skiing in Carinthia, which, you know, I know pretty well. There's Brakine Cliff, I'm this Kachberg, there's Hermagor. There's some very good skiing that would easily set you free. Last year, I did a sort of a week's road trip around there, and there's some excellent skiing.
Yeah, I was just wondering, how much does it cost to sort of have a day skiing in Slovenia?
I think the lift pass is about sort of 35 to 40, really. I think you only probably need a half day's pass on a lot of these places. You know, any good skier can ski them out in a, you know, 3 or 4 hours. So.
And what about prices like in resort and in town? I'm imagining it costs less than, you know, traditional European ski countries.
It's about a third cheaper, I would say. The food is excellent. There's a very big gastro food scene in Slovenia. They've got, you know, a three-star Michelin restaurant. But generally, the quality of the food was good. It's more Austrian than, say, Italian. So it's those sorts of meats, dumplings. And breakfasts are very Austrian, with that whole selection of meats and breads and stuff like that. Much more of a Austrian breakfast than, say, an Italian breakfast, which tends to focus on just the sweet things and coffee.
Well, that's brilliant, Rob. Thank you very much for that. We're going to move towards the close now. I enjoy all feedback about the show. I'd like to know what you think, especially about our features. So please contact me on social at Ski Podcast or by email, theskipodcast@gmail.com. We have a bit of feedback from different listeners. Andrew Brannan said, I enjoyed today's interview with Frank Baldwin. That was episode 205. I'm sure you could get him back on. It sounds like he's got 100 more stories in him. I don't know if Katia and Rob know Frank Baldwin, but if they have met him, they would know that he does have literally hundreds of stories.
I've written for Frank many times, and it's sometimes quite hard to get Frank off the phone, but he's very, very interesting. He's got brilliant stories, not just about skiing, about things like the World Cup getting stolen in 1966 and his father, who was a very successful lawyer representing all sorts of different people. He's got a story about everything, basically, Frank.
Yeah, we didn't even cover that one. That's a completely separate issue. But yeah, Frank has a lot of stories and just knows the industry so well. Also had a message from James. Love the podcast. I was keenly interested in your interview with Mike Gore from Vail Resorts. That was episode 204. I also found the two recent episodes discussing resorts in Norway fascinating. Keep up the good work. I'd also like to make a quick mention for Erica Tsai, who's an MBA student at Columbia University in New York. She recently contacted me to find out a little bit more about Vail Resorts' potential European expansion. And that all relates to episode 204. So, listener, if you'd like to know more about Vail Resorts and the Epic Pass, I recommend you listen to that episode. Plus, we had a big feedback discussion in episode 206 on the pros and cons of Vail Resorts and how things are changing and whether that will affect Europe. Right, we're going to move to the close now. If you like the podcast, I'm just going to ask you to do one thing this week. If you're listening and you're not already a subscriber, then it is very simple to subscribe. And if you do, within your app, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anything else, it means your app will automatically download the latest episode of the Ski Podcast for you, and you can listen to it when it suits you. I'll be honest, I checked mine earlier. I subscribe to 38 different podcasts. As you can guess, I don't listen to all of them, but I can cherry pick the episodes that are most interesting to me and just listen when it suits me. So if you could take a minute to subscribe, that would be great. Now, there are now 212 episodes of the Ski Podcast to catch up with. 135 were listened to in the last week. There is so much to listen to in our back catalogue. Just go to theskipodcast.com, search around the tags and categories, and you're bound to find something of interest to you. I was interested to see that maybe for the first time, more than half of our listeners in the last week were from outside the UK. And that included listeners in Guatemala, Korea, Tanzania, and Benin. So I'd like to thank you for listening today, wherever you are in the world. Now, you can follow me at Skipedia and the podcast at The Ski Podcast. But for now, I'd like to thank Intersport for supporting the show and thank my guest today, Katia. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me on again.
And Rob, thank you.
Absolute pleasure as always.
And finally, listener, thank you for joining us. And until next time, goodbye.